I arrived at the Caribbean Content Creators and Influencers Summit 2025 expecting spectacle. Ring lights, dance challenges, maybe a few TikTok celebrities posing by the beach. What I found instead was something far deeper, a movement. Inside that vibrant auditorium pulsing with accents from every island, Creole, Patois, Dutch, Spanish, and English, I witnessed a digital awakening. Young creators from Barbados, Jamaica, Trinidad, and the diaspora weren't just building brands. They were preserving language, challenging Eurocentric beauty standards, reclaiming ancestral stories, and exporting culture through algorithms. This summit wasn't just content, it was identity, wrapped in rhythm and filter. Here, influencers weren't influencers, they were griots, digital archivists, accidental revolutionaries. But behind the glamour lies a hard truth. Algorithms don't always reward authenticity, and visibility doesn't guarantee cultural preservation. So, what does it mean to be Caribbean in the age of content? And who gets to tell our stories? If you think this is just about TikTok, think again. And if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted truth. Chapter 1. The algorithm wears a head wrap. I stepped into the Hilton Conference Center in Port of Spain, camera in hand, credentials around my neck, and uncertainty in my chest. As a Caribbean documentarian, I've spent years chronicling the resistance stories of the past. Maroon uprisings, anti-colonial revolutions, the quiet power of grandmothers who held families together through generations of dislocation. But this was something else. Here, resistance wore lashes, glowed under ring lights, and was captioned with Gen Z slang. The Caribbean Content Creators and Influencers Summit 2025 was already buzzing on TikTok when I arrived. A video of Afro-Caribbean beauty influencers doing a choreographed dance to a soca remix of Burna Boy's City Boys had gone viral. The caption, "We know follow trends, we set them." That video alone had clocked over 10 million views in 48 hours. But I wasn't here for viral clips. I was here to understand the story beneath the scroll. Inside the main hall, the buzz was electric. LED panels lit up with live comments from social platforms, and flags from every island hung overhead like Caribbean constellations. Tables were covered in branded coconut water, and I overheard heated debates about algorithm changes, sponsored content ethics, and shadow bans on dialect. At first glance, it might have looked like any tech-forward summit. But to the trained eye, to the Caribbean eye, this was cultural ground zero. I met Chantel from St. Lucia, a comedy skit queen who turned traditional Creole proverbs into hilarious short videos that mixed old wisdom with current slang. One of her most famous, "Pa ni problemi pa kafe lapli." No problem, it's not raining. She used it to caption a video about ghosting situationships. Millions laughed, but few realized she was also preserving language. "If we don't speak it in public, on camera, in memes, it dies," she told me. "I'm not just making jokes, I'm archiving us." Next to her booth was Elijah from Dominica, a 22-year-old who went viral not for comedy, but for tradition. He documented climate change's impact on his village, interviewing elders in full Creole, pairing their wisdom with drone footage of eroded coastline. His most watched clip, an 80-year-old farmer explaining why he still plants by moon cycle, had over 2 million views. "The internet gave me an audience, but my people gave me a mission," Elijah said, pulling up a screen showing comments in French, Dutch, and Swahili. "People from across the Black diaspora are learning from us. That matters." But for every story of visibility, there was one of compromise. Panel discussions began with energy. I attended a session titled Going Viral Without Losing Your Roots. The speaker, a Jamaican media strategist, asked a question that hung heavy in the room. What happens when the algorithm doesn't understand dialect or doesn't recognize natural hair as professional? It's a question Caribbean creators wrestle with daily. Many shared stories of having to censor patois, reduce their cultural references, or over-explain their slang to remain algorithmically accessible. Some had been penalized by content moderation systems for posting dancehall choreography, despite similar Western content being promoted. We get flagged for our rhythm, one influencer said, but they remix it and make money. Cultural flattening, that's what many called it. The way TikTok and Instagram can turn deep-rooted traditions into digestible visuals, aesthetic without context. They love the vibe, not the history, said a fashion creator from Barbados. They want carnival feathers, not the story of rebellion behind the mask. And yet, despite all of this, there was power in the room. Creators weren't retreating, they were retooling. Some were building their own archives, oral history podcasts, dialect dictionaries, visual anthologies of hairstyles from Arawak to Afrofuturism. Others were creating workshops to teach creators how to retain authenticity while navigating sponsorships, how to code switch without losing soul. I watched a panel on monetizing without erasing, where a Haitian-American content creator broke down her process. First, she researches the root of the cultural element she's presenting. Then, she credits the elder or community it came from in every caption. Finally, she ensures her revenue is reinvested. Whether that's hiring Caribbean videographers or donating to a literacy fund in Port-au-Prince. This isn't just content, she said. It's ethical storytelling. Later, at the main stage, a Garifuna musician from Belize performed live with a steel pan player from Trinidad. The music wasn't pre-recorded. It pulsed in real time, merging sounds across centuries. Their collab was recorded live and instantly posted online with captions in multiple Caribbean dialects. I saw it shared within minutes by creators in Lagos, Toronto, and London. The Caribbean wasn't just broadcasting. It was reverberating. The audience, mostly under 30, stood in unison and sang along to lyrics only they could fully decode. Creole, Patois, Spanish, English. This wasn't a performance. It was a cultural cipher. And in that moment, I realized something. The summit wasn't just about influence. It was about insurgency. A soft, rhythmic, beautifully lit insurgency. Caribbean youth weren't waiting for traditional institutions to record their legacies. They were doing it now. In 60-second reels, in 15-minute YouTube monologues, in Discord rooms where they translated old folk tales into anime plots. It hit me again. How powerful the tools had become. Ring lights as symbols of visibility. Hashtags as archives. Comment sections as classrooms. In a world that often rendered us peripheral, these creators were carving central space. Still, no one pretended it was easy. Platform censorship came up often. How black creators were more likely to be flagged. How content tagged with Jamaican or Black Caribbean sometimes received reduced visibility. A sobering stat from a panelist. TikTok videos featuring Caribbean dialects had 38% less visibility in US markets unless accompanied by trending American music. That's why creators here were demanding transparency. Not just from platforms, but from themselves. It's easy to chase clout and lose soul, said one Guyanese fashion influencer. But that's not our legacy. Our legacy is resistance. Every time I post, I ask, would my great-grandmother recognize herself in this? If not, I don't post. That line stayed with me. At the end of day one, I walked out into the Trinidad dusk, the sky bleeding orange over the Gulf of Paria. Behind me, creators still gathered in circles, sharing edits, trading audio packs, teaching each other how to protect their IP. It felt like a digital crossroads, a meeting point between memory and momentum. And as I stood there, a young woman with Bayan accent tapped me on the shoulder. "You the Doku person, right?" "Yes," I said. She smiled, phone in hand, recording. "Good. We need more people documenting the documenters." She pressed post. I checked her bio. Storyteller, archivist, soft, revolutionary. That night, her clip of me went modestly viral. But more importantly, the caption read, "The revolution now comes with captions and content warnings, but it still comes." Chapter 2, Diaspora Pixels, Ancestral Code. The next morning, the summit's energy hadn't waned. It had matured. Conversations were no longer just about virality or camera setups. They had evolved into something deeper, more introspective. As I sipped a strong black coffee made with Jamaican Blue Mountain beans from a vendor booth run by two young sisters from Kingston, I found myself drawn to a breakout session titled "Diaspora Identity in the Age of Influence." Inside the room, it was standing room only. Attendees leaned against walls and sat cross-legged on the floor, their eyes fixed on the panel. The central speaker was Meikle, a Brooklyn-born YouTuber of Jamaican descent with over 1 million subscribers and a warm, unpolished delivery. No slides, no branding, just his voice. "I never felt Jamaican enough for my uncles," he said, "but TikTok gave me a second chance to connect, to learn patois, to cook ackee the way me granny did. The algorithm didn't teach me. My followers did." That line hit a nerve. Heads nodded around the room, a collective recognition rippling through the crowd. Diaspora identity is often defined by contradiction, feeling too foreign for home and too other for the places you were born. But here, through platforms often criticized for their superficiality, creators were piecing together cultural identity one post at a time. In the days of colonial exile, our ancestors were displaced by force. In the digital age, many of their descendants are returning, not by ship or plane, but through pixels. A TikTok duet with a Trinidadian singer, a reaction video to a Barbadian folklore skit, a comment in Creole under a Haitian dance tutorial. These fragments form a new kind of pilgrimage. Each scroll is a step home. I met Nia, a second-generation St. Lucian based in Toronto, who creates Instagram reels translating traditional lullabies into spoken word poetry. "I used to hide my heritage," she told me. "Now I perform it." Her voice shook slightly as she showed me her most recent reel, a duet between her voiceover and her grandmother's recorded singing, digitally restored from a cassette tape. "That's the only recording I have of her," she whispered. "Now the world has it too." Across the summit, the emotional terrain of diaspora was being navigated with grace and sometimes pain. One panelist, a mixed-race Bajan Trini American photographer, spoke about the psychological toll of constant self-curation. "Being Caribbean online is a performance," she said. "You're expected to be joyful, rhythmic, full of island vibes. But what about our grief? What about our rage?" These were the silences the summit dared to speak into. There was a space called the Ancestral Tech Lab, a dimly lit room filled with projection screens looping historical footage, carnival clips from the 1960s, maroon celebrations, sugarcane harvesting rituals. Here, creators sat with headphones on, remixing the past. A group of Jamaican-American students were layering dub rhythms over oral history interviews. Nearby, a queer filmmaker from St. Kitts was syncing footage of her great-grandmother washing clothes in the river with a modern spoken word piece on gender roles in the diaspora. The lab wasn't about nostalgia. It was about coding ancestry into the present, turning cultural memory into usable software for the next generation. I interviewed Kirvin, a Haitian-Cuban creator who had gone viral on YouTube for decoding voodoo dance movements and tracing their roots to West African rituals. In one video, he maps a single ceremonial step from his grandmother's village back to a Yoruba funeral rite, complete with visual overlays, subtitles in three languages, and AI-assisted motion tracking. "We don't have to wait for universities to validate our history," Tonti told me. "We are the curriculum now." That idea, "we are the curriculum now," felt like the unspoken mantra of the entire summit. It echoed again during a roundtable about language preservation online. Caribbean dialects, Creoles, and indigenous tongues face growing threats from linguistic homogenization, especially on global platforms optimized for English. Yet, creators here were defying that. TikTok series were teaching Guyanese Creole idioms through memes. Instagram stories offered 30-second patois lessons. One creator even built a chatbot that responds in Creole. A linguist from Guadeloupe stood up and shared this: "Language is not just communication. It is resistance. When you say, 'Mideya,' or 'Where you are, say,' you're not just greeting someone. You're declaring your survival." That same afternoon, I found myself in a quieter corner of the summit, an open-air cafe garden where creators met for informal chats. I sat with three women, one from Martinique, another from the Virgin Islands, and a third from Grenada. They called themselves the Tri-Island Syndicate. Together, they run a podcast focused on Caribbean feminism, digital beauty standards, and colorism in influencer spaces. Their latest episode: "The Algorithm Prefers Light Skin," a bold critique of platform biases and the internalized colonialism that shapes online engagement. "We lose followers every time we talk about skin tone," the Grenadian host said, unfazed. "But we gain freedom." These women were not merely responding to online culture, they were rewriting it. They challenged me too. As a documentarian, I often hold the lens, but they made me examine the lens itself. Who gets visibility? Who gets platformed? Who gets erased, even in celebration? They reminded me that Caribbean identity is not a monolith. It is textured, fragmented, and evolving, sometimes harmoniously, often in tension. And the digital space reflects that. One person's reclaiming of heritage can be another's trauma trigger. One island's dominant narrative might erase another's silence. But perhaps the most powerful moment of the day came not from a creator, but from an elder. In a summit session titled "Elders React," older Caribbean citizens watched and responded live to trending TikToks and YouTube shorts made by younger generations. I'll never forget the face of Miss Isadora, an 82-year-old storyteller from Tobago, as she watched a Jamaican-American creator reenact her great-grandmother's immigration story, using split-screen effects and ghostly sound overlays. Tears welled up in her eyes. "They're telling our story better than we ever could," she said, her voice cracking, "and in ways we never dreamt of." A standing ovation followed. Not for the tech, not for the view count, but for the bridge between generations that had just formed in real time. And in that moment, I understood something profound. That Caribbean content creation isn't about branding. It's about ancestral continuity. It's the digital manifestation of calabash storytelling, bush tea wisdom, river baptisms, market talk, and carnival chants. It's not just about going viral. It's about making the invisible visible again and again. The day ended with a quiet walking tour led by creators through Port of Spain's arts district. Murals came alive with AR filters. Local dancers performed choreographies to remix traditional songs. Passersby recorded and posted it all. I stayed back, watching the light fade across the street art, feeling the weight and wonder of everything I had heard that day. So much of what defines us was once passed down orally, in shadow and secret. Now it lives in the cloud. We used to whisper our stories so they wouldn't be stolen. Now we shout them online so they won't be forgotten. Chapter 3. The New Griots. Platforms, Power, and Politics. By the third and final day of the Caribbean Content Creators and Influencers Summit 2025, the buzz had settled into something heavier, something more focused. The spectacle had softened, and beneath the trending hashtags and follow-for-follow energy, a new kind of urgency had emerged. If day one was celebration and day two was identity, then day three was confrontation. I started the morning at a panel called Platforms as Colonizers, a phrase that immediately caught my attention. The panelists were sharp, diverse, and unapologetic. A media ethics professor from Barbados, a queer Trinidadian activist who runs a shadow banned IG channel, and a Haitian-American entrepreneur who recently built a decentralized video hosting site. "We're not just creators," one panelist began. "We're digital laborers, and the platforms we labor for, they're not neutral. They're profit-driven machines trained to erase nuance and reward performance." That statement wasn't hyperbole. It was lived reality. Many creators at the summit shared horror stories of having their accounts banned, muted, or demonetized for posting culturally specific content. Creole lyrics flagged as hate speech, carnival dances marked explicit, even indigenous prayers categorized as suspicious. Meanwhile, trends borrowed from those very traditions, stripped of context, were monetized by influencers from outside the culture. It wasn't just digital appropriation, it was digital colonization. Later that morning, I interviewed Keisha Murray, a cultural strategist from Jamaica who consults with creators across the diaspora. She had a directness I admired. No fluff, no branding jargon, just truth. "You, Hafi, teach them. You're not just making content, you're shaping perception. When you go viral, you become a reference point. People who never hear about Dominica or St. Vincent now associate us with your 15 seconds. So you better make it count." She wasn't wrong. On platforms like TikTok, first impressions become permanent records. For many global audiences, Caribbean identity is not encountered in textbooks or films, but in loops of 10-second dances, cooking videos, and comedic skits. That kind of power is intoxicating. It's also dangerous. Keisha's team had recently worked with a creator whose post about Caribbean spirituality went viral, but was quickly stitched by a Western influencer who ridiculed it as voodoo cosplay. The result? Thousands of hateful comments, a takedown request, and a month-long shadow ban. "We train our creators in cultural framing," she said. "We teach them that the internet doesn't know context. You have to build it yourself." But even well-framed content isn't immune. Another panelist, a popular queer beauty influencer from Guyana, shared how her content constantly gets hidden by algorithmic filters. "They say they're protecting users from explicit material," she said. "But what they're really doing is policing black queer bodies." These stories weren't outliers. They were patterns, and they underscored a growing consensus. Platforms must be held accountable. Throughout the summit, there were whispers of a new initiative, one that had been kept quiet until the closing ceremony. Rumors swirled about something called islandstory.ai, a homegrown platform designed specifically for Caribbean content. By mid-afternoon, the rumors were confirmed. On the main stage, a coalition of Caribbean technologists, linguists, and creators announced the soft launch of islandstory.ai, a decentralized platform designed to host, archive, and promote Caribbean digital storytelling, free from algorithmic suppression. The room erupted. I stood near the back, watching creators cry, clap, and hug. This wasn't just a tech announcement. It was emancipation. Islandstory.ai promised tools that existing platforms never offered: auto-captioning in Patois, Creole, and Quayol. Revenue sharing that supports community projects. Ancestral archive linking, so creators can tag historical figures and cultural references. A built-in flagging system for appropriation and misrepresentation. Curation by Caribbean scholars, not bots. The symbolism was unmistakable. Just as the Caribbean fought for sovereignty through revolutions, now a new generation was fighting for digital sovereignty. Reclaiming space not with cutlasses or Molotovs, but with servers, syntax, and software. But the day wasn't all hope. In a closed-door session titled The Pressure to Perform, creators spoke privately, off the record, about the emotional toll of being public while Black, while Caribbean, while queer, while culturally conscious. One confessed to rehearsing authenticity until it became its own costume. Another admitted that her most successful videos were those that leaned into stereotypes she hated. "It's like the platforms want me to perform a caricature of my own identity," she said. "If I don't do it, I get ignored. If I do, I feel fake." These confessions were raw and necessary. Because here's the paradox. Visibility without agency is exploitation. And content without context is just digital tourism. I left the session emotionally drained but intellectually fueled. The questions echoing in my mind weren't easy. How do we tell our stories without becoming commodities? How do we remain authentic in systems designed to flatten us? How do we monetize our culture without auctioning it? As the sun began to set, the summit transitioned to its final panel, the new griots, digital storytelling as ancestral duty. On stage sat five creators, each representing a different island, a different medium, and a different generation. They spoke of storytelling as responsibility, not performance, of algorithms as drums, of Instagram grids as village walls. The youngest, a 17-year-old podcaster from St. Vincent, said something I'll never forget. "Griots used to hold memory in song. We hold it in upload speed." The audience was still, reverent. You could feel the weight of his words ripple through the room. In that moment, the past, present, and future of Caribbean identity collapsed into one breath, one beat, one mission. After the final applause, the creators poured out into the courtyard, where local musicians played acoustic versions of soca and reggae classics under string lights. I sat off to the side, quietly reviewing my notes. But then a tap on the shoulder pulled me back. It was Tanisha, a cultural curator from Antigua I had met briefly on day one. "Still documenting?" she asked with a smile. "Always," I replied. She nodded, then looked out over the crowd of young people laughing, dancing, filming, digitizing joy. "You know, they used to tell us Caribbean people couldn't unify. Too many islands, too many accents, too much history." She paused. "But look at them now. Unified in data. Unified in diaspora. Each one telling their version of the truth." That night, I sat on my hotel balcony, uploading my own reflections to a secure drive. Below me, the streets of Port of Spain pulsed with life. Cars honking, music blaring, someone laughing from a window. "The city never sleeps," they say. "Neither does culture. And neither can we. Not if we want the next generation to inherit more than hashtags."